If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
It's Power Hour LSU.
PHL, extra little bit of swag, an extra little bit of taste.
Yeah. Man, I'm headed to the fair. Yeah. Terror of the Titan, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power. LSU with Carter, man, I'm headed to the fair. Terror of the Tiger, I'ma always keep it real. Come every on. Team gon' get the power, it's the power. LSU with Carter, it's the power.
Let's freaking go, PHL Nation. This is insane. I have to show some major, major, major love to LSU and the NIL movement that is happening for the Tigers because, well, it just happened to be that there are a lot of five stars that are starting to get interested in going to LSU. It's amazing how that works. So you guys know I am not the day-to-day recruiting expert. I admitted that I missed on DJ Pickett because I did release a Patreon the day before that I thought Pickett was going to pick Oregon, but everyone changed their tune on LSU. I got a call the very next day from a patron saying, hey, you know you are wrong about DJ Pickett. He is picking LSU today. And it turned out that you guys are right. So I want you to hear what Steve Wilfong has to say about five-star Jonah Williams.
LSU's in the top two or three for him. Baseball is also going to be a big part of his decision. He plans to play football and baseball on the next level. He just touched 94 miles per hour on the gun. That's big time for a left-handed pitcher this past week. So exciting baseball prospect that's excited about LSU. His dad tells me that they're still looking into taking some potential visits next week, but Oregon, Texas A&M, LSU are three programs that I'm looking hard at for Jonah Williams.
Whoo! 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 Come on! And take a free ride! Huh? 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 I'm fired up. So what does all of this mean? We're going to talk about Jabari Antoine. We're going to talk about Derek Meadows because they're both committing on Saturday. And I am getting excited about both of them. Heard good things as far as LSU is concerned. Once again, I'm just not my thing. I'll wait till they actually announce. Look, I did give you guys some insight on NIL and organization. Like I have said, and I have been consistent about this for forever, do I agree that behind the scenes, LSU had some organizational NIL issues? Yes, I heard those things, reported on those things, shared those things. I wasn't the only one that said this thing, but it makes sense if you don't get any of the portal DTs that you were after, very publicly after, and it was just a colossal failure. We were off rhythm, if you could put it that way. And we didn't land anybody. And there are questions about NIL and all those things. I do think the TAF, Bayou Tradition crossover is something. And I said it when they actually announced it, that it was a big deal. I've also said I'm not going to break all of it down because, well, it's not my area of expertise. I like actually talking about actual football. But it signified that there was alignment. And that's something that Brian Kelly has always been big on. Alignment, communication, those things. And we seem to have fixed those issues during that weird month of Dominic Williams and Brian Kelly's quote being the biggest story in college football for that week. That LSU was looking for people that want to be a part of what we are doing. So, yes, it is true that DJ Pickett got a nice little something-something for coming to LSU. That's a no-duh thing. You should be able to put two and two together there. That all of a sudden we were able to get him, you know, on board when everyone was feeling it was going to be Oregon. So the bottom line is LSU looked at themselves in the mirror and said, we need to get our act together in the modern day. And it's not that they, and I've always been consistent with this as well. It's not that they haven't been doing NIL and stuff like that. We just really needed to get it together. There's still a lot of work to be done. I will also tell you that LSU might not always have the deepest bag in college football. I don't think that that's relevant. I also think if you have the absolute deepest pockets, that may not actually be a good thing. A lot of people would feel that way because there is no salary cap in all of it. But if you as a team know that you have an infinite amount of money, which, by the way, doesn't exist, but in theory it does because there is no salary cap like we just mentioned, I'm not sure if it is a good thing that in order for you to get a recruit, you absolutely positively have to pay the absolute top dollar to get every recruit that you want. So, yes, LSU picked it up for DJ Pickett. DJ Pickett is a very good player. And the bottom line is the PR of getting this has resonated. It has really resonated. It has with Jabari Antoine. Obviously, Derek Meadows. It is interesting that he was going to commit this past Saturday. He decides to push it back to this Saturday. It's interesting, especially of what we're talking about right now. And Jonah Williams, a lot of LSU steam. It is a little bit different, though, because he is a baseball player as well. Really good week if you're an LSU Tiger fan. Definitely, if we're being honest, the best recruiting week of the year has been this week. If you factor in not only football, but baseball, as LSU has absolutely crushed it, picking up some Texas A&M baseball commits. And obviously, Jonah Williams, you know, it kind of goes along with it. So for those that aren't familiar, he is a consensus five-star safety. And LSU has always kind of been in it. But the baseball aspect of this is very interesting, especially if you can sell to Jonah Williams, hey, we had a safety who also played baseball, who also pitched, who also threw 94, and also got drafted in the NFL. We've done that at LSU. Obviously, that was well over a decade ago. But the bottom line is we've done it with Chad Jones, obviously. So it's a very interesting recruitment, and we'll see how it goes. We will. And as far as recruiting is concerned, I still believe Khalik Lockett would obviously make me do a backflip if we were able to get him. But it is going to be interesting, the recruitment of him. But I do feel better about Antoine and Meadows on Saturday. So there you go. And to me, this signifies Brian Kelly has really been locked in this week. SEC Media Days, he crushed it on Monday. But no one cares about that. What are you going to be able to do on the trail? Brian Kelly has crushed it. He has absolutely positively murdered it. And I also believe, and I really do mean this, and I have said this as well since Bryce Underwood has committed, this could be the first year in a very long time that LSU ends up with the number one overall recruiting class in 2025. It's going to be hard to catch Alabama. They got five stars already committed for 2025. Georgia and Ohio State, of course, will be two of the other big contestants. And then, of course, Oregon. But look, it's possible. It is very possible that they could have the number one overall recruiting class. And on top of that, something else I love from an LSU perspective is you look at the single most important position that you need to recruit from high school, which I feel is offensive line. That position is already pretty much solidified. in recruiting. You got three top 100 recruits at that very critical position. So things are shaping up very nicely for LSU. Now, a lot of you aren't that interested in recruiting. Like I said last night, you're waiting for the dotted line to be signed. And look, a lot of you are interested to see what the actual product on the field looks like before you pat any coach on the back. And I'll say this, as I apologized to Corey Raymond yesterday, as he did pull off DJ Pickett to LSU, even though everyone felt he was going to Oregon the day before. Congrats to Corey Raymond. But it was a team effort, you know, with this, all the way down from recruiting staffers to guys and gals that don't necessarily work in recruiting, but they make some other things happen. It was a really well done job by Frank Wilson, who obviously oversees all the recruiting, and Brian Kelly, you know, obviously he makes all the final decisions. Austin Thomas, the list goes on and on. So just a really, really good job by them. And the PR has definitely been worth it. I will also say, let's see these guys actually coach the defensive guys. So let's go to D-Pain, who shows me the most love on the Twitter space. What's the chances that DJ Pickett sticks come signing day? I would put it at a 75 to 80% chance. Obviously, there's always a chance that he could go elsewhere. And we could be adults and say that, right? Because he was very interested in going to the other schools. He's not from Louisiana and so on and so on. But I do think he'll end up signing with LSU. Because more than likely, in the long run, if you commit to a school, about 75% of the time, if a player publicly commits to a school, they will actually sign. So I'll put it at 75, 80% chance. So there you go. Now, Mick says, did we hit our salary cap yet? Well, I'll tell you this. The one good thing about PR is you can help some people sign some checks when one domino falls, right? And that's the exciting thing. The one thing that also makes this commitment, as we say hi to RSX, Cliff, Tony, normal guy. I think I saw J-Red in here. Mac, Tyler, who will be at the Shreveport Card Show here in a few weeks. Jared, Epic Shorty, Tony the Tiger. Good to see each and everyone in here. Now, if you missed this yesterday, next PHL get together. Not this Saturday, but the next Shreveport Card Show. It's going down in Louisiana. I'll be set up there. I'll have my table. I'll have my collection. And if you're a PHL viewer, all you got to do is come to my table and I will for sure hook you up with a card. I'll have a ton of giveaways. And I shouted this young man out on Twitter. Because this is the number one thing that I get from people that don't like recruiting. They just say, I just want people that sign on the dotted line. And I want people that really want to be here. This is one of my favorite cards in my collection. I'm going to give it out, though. First $20 Super Chat. It's a Derek Dillon card. Basically, his rookie card. There's only 25 of these in existence. And if you want to talk about someone that really wanted to be at LSU, this young man definitely did. He is the Auburn killer. We don't beat Auburn in 2018 without him. And we probably don't beat Auburn in 2019 without him. It's up in the air. That is really up in the air. Definitely in 2018, we don't beat him without him. But in 2019, he made one critical play that saved us and saved our undefeated season. So first $20 Super Chat gets a Derek Dillon autograph card. But I would give away a lot of my rare stuff there. So, there you go. Now, I have had a few of you ask, Carter, I want you to do more video game streaming with the college football video game. It is interesting. I spent the extra $30 to get it the 3 days early. And I only ended up playing it the first day. And I haven't done any Dynasty or Road to Glory or anything like that. It's not that I dislike the game. It is really good. It's just I'm like, man, am I really going to sit here and play this game for 8 hours? Because I can. No, I can. Don't think I can't. Don't challenge me, people. I can do it. It takes a very talented individual to pull that off. But I can do it. You might not be able to. But we will do it again. We'll aim for Saturday or Sunday where we will stream some of the video game. And I can actually just answer your questions while we do it. So, there you go. Now, I want to get into some interesting discussions I have had with people around the SEC. And one thing, as I dove deeper into this video, I have one on Power Hour SEC that will likely come out tomorrow. One team I am fading, and I'm not just doing this because I have a rabid fan base of people that hate this school in particular. I am fading Alabama going into next year. And it's not because I don't like their talent. They still have the highest blue chip ratio in the country outside of Georgia and Ohio State. They still are recruiting at an extremely high level. They actually did get a coach whose winning percentage as a head coach rivals that of Nick Saban. Kalen DeBoer is 104-12 as a head football coach in 9 seasons. He is 28-16 against the spread in the last 4 seasons. So it's not only that he's winning ahead of what the Vegas expectation was for that game. The guy is really freaking good. But he has got an uphill battle this year with some key components with this year's team. And the one thing I do appreciate about the Brian Kelly era up to this point is continuity. And I understand, how can you say there's continuity in the Brian Kelly era when they just fired the entire defensive staff? Well, that was something that needed to happen. The only person who has left this team on his own volition on the LSU on-field coaching staff is Mike Dimbrock. And the heir apparent to Mike Dimbrock sat next to him during his entire tenure. And Joe Sloan. So you factor in the offensive line coming back. You factor in Garrett Nussmeier. You factor all of these things in. And part of why I'm fading Alabama and getting more excited about LSU beating Alabama at home for the second consecutive time is Alabama has a lot of moving parts in this year one. They really do. And I think the most undertold story in the SEC regarding Alabama is Ryan Grubb not being there. I think it is so huge that he left. This is a guy who's been with Kalen DeBoer for 12 consecutive years and has called his plays for the last 4. And it's going to be hard to replace that. At Alabama, with a quarterback who I think is extremely overvalued going into next year, who I don't think really fits what they want out of the quarterback position. So, fading Alabama just a little bit. I have grown on Ole Miss this offseason, but I keep going back to how that sets up on the schedule for LSU. And as much as I am concerned about LSU's personnel, especially on the defensive side of the football. There are some offensive things that I'm concerned about. I do want to point out that Brian Kelly feels this team is deep. He has said so at SEC Media Days. So I like LSU, and a big reason why I'm starting to grow on LSU going into next year has a lot to do with non-LSU things. And that could get in trouble. That can get you into overthinking things, right? But there are a lot of schedule breaks that have broken LSU's way. And that can be so huge for a team. It really can. So, there you go. We say hi to the Master Blaster. It's out of Tony. I did not know this. Jonah Williams' coach was Blake Baker's high school coach, according to Chance. Or at least he's asking if that is true. Honestly, don't know. But tomorrow I'm releasing a video on Power Hour SEC on Alabama and why I think they could be in some serious trouble going into next year. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. Let me see here. Next thing, this was asked to me yesterday, and I didn't get to it. It was via Instagram DM. So the best way for you to get your question answered, obviously, if you super chat, I immediately see it. Venmo, Cash App, or on the screen. But yeah, I am on Instagram at PowerLSU. Released a little joke on there a little bit, or I might do some more comedy kind of content. But I did get a message from Mark, who wanted to ask about Ashton Stamps, and he said, "I heard what you said the other day about Ashton Stamps. He's a 3-star year 2 guy. I believe he was underrated." And then I actually need to pull up the full message. It was something along those lines. And look, what I said about Ashton Stamps the other day, it's not that I don't believe he can't be an SEC starting corner. Okay. It's not that. My point, though, was more so you feel better about a defensive back room if you have more 4 and 5 stars, if you have more DJ Picketts in the room. And I understand, I have pointed out multiple times, LSU has had a high volume of top 100 defensive recruits not work out over the past couple of years. But I pointed out multiple times, I do think a lot of it is because of coaching. I really do. And some really bad injury luck for a few of those kids. So it's not that I don't think Ashton Stamps can't be an SEC corner. It's just you have to be real about your expectations. And I think one thing that worked against Ashton Stamps was there was a viral video of him going one-on-one versus Justin Jefferson that made its rounds last offseason. And it definitely caught the eyeballs of a lot of people. And it was just like some like random workout or something like that. So yeah, I think he's a gamer. I think he's someone that can be an SEC caliber corner. But am I concerned? Yeah. You know, he was banged up for a lot of last year. So the sample size is a little small. But are you comfortable with calling him your cornerback one next year? I don't know. I don't know how many of you feel that way. I will say I did get a pick six with him on the college football game. So there you go. Let's talk about this Scotty B. Jakeem Stewart is really working to reclassify with the number one class incoming. Okay. So if Jakeem Stewart does reclass, all right, it's kind of a complicated question. I did a non-live stream video on this, and it was these, if you want to see it, it's the Zion Williams recruiting video that we released. And I broke down what reclassifying actually means. But I'll do my best to explain it here. Most of you do know it, but some kind of sort of struggle with the concept. So Jakeem Stewart is in the class of 2026. And the problem with being in the class of 2026 is you are only a high school junior. So you get super hyped up. Everyone knows who you are, especially if you're like him. He's a can't-miss five-star recruit, but he is only a high school junior. So if you were to get his commitment, you would have to wait 2 years, right? He's not a member of the class of 2025, which means not this year, but the next, they will be ready to go to play. So what reclassifying means is you go from being a high school junior to a high school senior, and you are now a member of the class of 2025. So it doesn't mean you're able to play for LSU this year, season opener versus USC. It means you are a member of the 2025 recruiting class. So most of you know what that meant, but you know, we don't talk a whole lot about reclassifying because it hardly ever happens. Now, why do kids reclassify? Well, for a few reasons. Number one, it gets you to college football quicker. So the second question is, what a lot of you probably have is, how many LSU recruits have reclassified in the past? So one off the top of my mind is Colin Hurley. So Colin Hurley was class of 2025. He reclassified to class of 2024. And that ended up being a really big deal because I am not so sure if LSU gets Bryce Underwood if Colin Hurley stays in class of 2025 because he was a quarterback commit. So reclassifying is a good thing more often than not, because you're able to get the kid to campus quicker. Now, for Jakeem Stewart, why is that relevant for him? What is the benefit for him? Well, there's a lot. The biggest is it prolongs your theoretical NFL career. You know, it is a lot harder to maintain a high level of play at defensive line. Now, I'll say compared to like running back, receiver, and a few other positions, linebacker being one of them, defensive tackles are able to play a little bit longer than some other positions, but it does get you to the NFL quicker. That's the main thing. So this happened with Desmond Ricks. So obviously a lot of us thought he was going to go to LSU. He picked Alabama, and he reclassified from 25 to 2024. So it happens quite a bit. A lot of five stars do it. Quinn Ewers did it. Top 100 recruits. Because what's the benefit of playing an extra year of high school football? So, if that were to happen, what would happen to LSU's recruiting class? Well, as far as their overall ranking, it would come down to how Jakeem Stewart is ranked for the class of 2025. Because you go from being against a set of peers that are juniors to a set of peers that are theoretically a year older than you are. More often than not, when a player reclassifies, their recruiting grade stays the same. When Quinn Ewers reclassified, he was still a five-star, top 10 overall quarterback. When Desmond Ricks reclassified, he was still a five-star corner. When Colin Hurley reclassified, he was still a four-star quarterback. So more often than not, they keep your recruiting grade the same.
They do.
So if he were to do that, and if he were to pick LSU, that would mean LSU would have three of the top 10 players in the class of 2025. Stewart, Bryce Underwood, and then, of course, DJ Pickett. And that does not include Harlan Berry. Let's go to Jared. I almost reclassified from class of 93 to 94. Legendary, bro. So, do I think this is going to happen, Scotty B? I don't know. I would tend to think it would, because it benefits all parties involved. It just does. Now, coming up next, the biggest spoiler to the college football playoff next year might not be who you think. It's coming up, but first, our friends at NOPOD want to improve your home. Let's go. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go.
I think joy and happiness and doing things you like is important.
My favorite thing is sports cards. When I'm not on YouTube, I am building my collection. And when I started, I wish there was a sports card strategy show.
He wasn't necessarily going to be a first round pick before all this Heisman buzz. Now they're talking about him being a top five pick.
Paul Hickey and the team at nooffseason.com personally helped build my Jaden Daniels collection, and they're looking to do the same for you. Just check them out on social media or nooffseason.com. So it was interesting that the school with probably the most negative vibes going into next year could be the school that spoils the SEC party in the playoff. And that's Arkansas. So, you take a look at every SEC program. Outside of Vanderbilt, and they are Vanderbilt, they recruit far worse than every other SEC school. There's no school that has less going for them than Arkansas. Most Arkansas fans believe their coach won't even be the coach. In fact, there's quite a few Arkansas fans that feel their offensive coordinator, Bobby Petrino, could take over the next year. Their defensive coordinator, Travis Williams, could take over the next year. Or their old defensive coordinator at UNLV, Barry Odom. There were a few Arkansas media members who said this week that Barry Odom has a good shot at being the next Arkansas coach. So, just negative vibes all around for Arkansas. I don't think that they're that good. I really don't. I think Jaquindon Jackson, their running back, is so unfreaking believably underrated. But the offensive line looks very mediocre. wide receiver. I like Andrew Armstrong, but all the other weapons are just kind of meh. But you can make a strong case they have the best tight end room in the SEC. You can make a strong case that they have the best runner at the quarterback position in the SEC in Talen Green. And their defense is under year two under Travis Williams. They have some interesting pieces. I'm not going to say that they're great, but they've got decent pieces. We'll put it at that. Arkansas could really spoil this SEC party for two schools in particular. LSU and Texas. There is something very dangerous about playing a school that has a very one-sided view of a rivalry. It is very, very, very dangerous. Now, why is that the case? Well, it's because you're not getting up for the game the same way the other team is getting up for the game. And Arkansas, in their minds, their two biggest rivals, LSU and Texas. LSU for modern day stuff, battle for the Golden Boot, and Texas in the Southwestern Conference. So some of our younger viewers might not know what the SWC is. I really don't know a whole lot about that either. That's way before my time as well. But if you're alive in the 60s, you know all about the SWC. And the biggest rivalry then was Arkansas and Texas, or one of the biggest rivalries, we'll put it that way. So it was explained today at SEC Media Days from Sam Pittman that Arkansas fans hate Texas more than anyone. They even asked him about that. So you're telling me that Arkansas gets LSU in Fayetteville off a bye, and they also get Texas at home after a bye. And both of them have tricky Power 5 games before they play each other. LSU has to play Ole Miss at home. Very competitive game that LSU will be more focused on. And they have a look ahead spot to Texas A&M. Texas, the week before, as you can see with the schedule matrix on the screen, they have Florida with Kentucky and Texas A&M around the corner. Tricky, tricky spots for those schools. So I don't think Arkansas is going to be that good. Their SEC over-under is at 4.5. And that even scares me even more if I'm LSU or Texas. Because let's say you do see Arkansas lose a bunch of games early in the year. They are fighting for their bowl eligibility. And let's just say by the Texas game, they're not even able to be bowl eligible. Well, that game becomes their Super Bowl. So it's tough. It's never easy. It's never pretty versus Arkansas. I do think those games are very, very juicy for Texas and LSU fans. Now, should you take my word to heart? Well, remember what I told you last year. There was one team on LSU's schedule last year that I told you to look out for, and it was Missouri. I predicted Missouri would go over their win total. I predicted that that game would be an absolutely, positively brutal one for LSU. And had it not been for Jaden Daniels going Super Saiyan, we would have gotten our asses kicked. I'm warning you about the Arkansas game. And it's something that we tend to forget. And it's one thing why I push against the college football playoff expanding. is what makes college football so great isn't necessarily how good you are. And sometimes it's not how good your opponent is. It's when you play that opponent that matters. Win is never discussed enough about your opponents. You know, one underrated thing about Nick Saban's success in Alabama is if you actually go look at their schedule formats, it's always kind of been the same. All their schedules kind of look the same. It's a reason why two of the most powerful teams in the SEC, LSU and Alabama, they always schedule a bye before they play each other. They know it's one of the toughest games on the schedule, if not the toughest. So it's not that Alabama or LSU are scared of one another. They're not scared of the team. They're scared of when they play the team. In early November, which is later in the year, when you need a rest up before that game, those schools have always made sure that they schedule that bye week. Win matters in college football. But guess what? With the playoff, it doesn't really matter as much because, well, just not as big a deal. It's just not. You get more wiggle room. Jared, thank you for the super chat. Thank you so much. Let's go to Sibley and Chance. Chance, I think, a little bit younger than Sibley. Sibley could tell you all about the SMU SWC days. Old-timers will tell you how different the game was. It was very different, not only in terms of play, but conferences and all of that. Let's go to Blanche with a very interesting super chat. Jared, thank you so much for your super as well. Which SEC team has the best tight end, and why is it LSU? Who is LSU's tight end coach? Well, LSU's tight end coach is Slade Nagel. Comes over from Tulane, as Paris points out. And Tulane, of course, was very lucky to have him. He has play calling experience in his background. Obviously, being from Louisiana, this is a dream job, being on LSU's coaching staff. So excited for Slade Nagel as LSU's tight end coach. He's going to help out with special teams as well. But which SEC team has the best tight end? Well, I would honestly say when it comes to tight end depth, it actually is Arkansas. I'm not just saying that just because I randomly talked about him. Luke Haas was so good when he was healthy, and he torched us last year. He got hurt in the A&M game, and he didn't return after that. So Luke Haas is very good. And then their second tight end is Ty Washington, who's also been very hurt. Now, I would say that's the best 1-2 combo. And that's just not me saying it. It's Pro Football Focus saying it. Outside of Brock Bowers, Arkansas had the number 2 and number 3 tight ends, according to Pro Football Focus's grading, which was Luke Haas and Ty Washington. Now, do I believe those guys are better than Mason Taylor? I don't. I think Luke Haas as a receiver is better. But I feel like Mason Taylor is a more complete player. He's also year 3. Luke Haas is only year 2. But I would take Mason Taylor over both of them. I'm not just saying that just to say it. Mason Taylor was the best blocking tight end in the SEC. And yes, he had an absolutely positively pivotal drop in the Alabama game last year. And he really hadn't had drop issues since early in his career. but I would still take Mason Taylor over everybody, over anyone else in the SEC right now. I really do. Now, does he have the highest ceiling? No, he might not have the highest ceiling at tight end on his own team. But he's good. I would say he's the most complete tight end. There's really only one area where Mason Taylor is very limited, and it's after the catch. But the truth is, that is the last thing you want out of your tight end, is after the catch ability. And if we're being honest, how many SEC tight ends have you ever seen that's good after the catch? Really only one, Brock Bowers. And Kyle Pitts, maybe. But Bowers was the only one I could just think of that was special after the catch, where it felt like he was a running back after the catch. So Mason Taylor is definitely a top five SEC tight end. I think Amari Nyblack is very interesting at Texas. Obviously, he transfers over from Alabama. Steve Sarkisian draws up so much good stuff for his tight ends. Going back to 2020 Alabama to this past year with Jatavion Sanders. So I think Nyblack is going to have a really big time year at Texas. Obviously, Georgia, you have Lawson Lucky, you have Oscar Delp. So it's very interesting when you look at the tight end landscape. So yeah, I would agree with you, Blanche. I would say Mason Taylor's the best tight end. I'll say that because blocking matters, and he was the best blocker last year. Now, Cliff points out Kamarion Pimpton will be a beast if used properly. Yeah, and this is something else with Kamarion Pimpton. He actually did get a year one grade from me, but it had a huge asterisk next to it. I thought his blocking was going to be really bad in year one, and it was. It just was. There's no sidestepping that. But he's really, really talented. Now, I'm going to give you another wild card tight end in the SEC. And he also plays for Arkansas. He's from New Orleans originally. Varkis Gums is a very interesting tight end. Now, he is purely a receiving tight end. Very, very interesting player. Very interesting player. But yeah, I love the tight end position. I really do. It's such an interesting jackknife that every team must have. But yeah, if Pimpton's blocking gets even slightly better, he's got a real shot of being something. And then obviously, Mac Markway has those blocking chops. We'll see how he does next year. Still a long way to go for him. And obviously, Tre'Davious Green from LSU's vantage point. Now, this is something that LSU is trying to figure out. What is Tre'Davious Green's best position? Is he even a tight end at all? But if he is or he isn't, he's definitely a pass catcher. So we'll see what happens. That is true, Sibley. Man. Dude, there are so many Arkansas old-timers that will tell you about how much they hated Texas during the SWC days, man. Yeah, I think that's back, obviously, pre-Lou Holtz at Arkansas, but that's when Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson, and Jerry Jones played at Arkansas, and Frank Broyles was a coach. Let me see. Okay, it's an interesting question. via the Twitter DMs. I don't know if I'm going to pay the Elon blue check for me to start streaming again. I don't know if I'm going to. But we'll see. Chance he is. Danny Lewis still is at Alabama, and he is the fourth-string tight end. And Chance, you've been watching me for a while. One ridiculous truth that has some exceptions. But when LSU loses out on a non-five-star player, it is ridiculous how many of them do not pan out. They just don't. Like, they do not pan out at another school. Now, why is that the case? I don't know. But Danny Lewis was kind of a late riser, and he's not really done a whole lot. Okay. This is, I do want to share this opinion, and this kind of goes more into like Sibley world because he knows these people. I hate conference realignment. I do. It is talked about a lot. My only bold conference realignment take, some of it is just sourced. Some of it is just vibes. So the truth here is whatever you hear about realignment, really sit and think about if you truly believe this to be true. Because even more so than a head coaching search, conference realignment discussion is so close to the vest because you have the television contracts. You have all these different people that that want you to go to a new conference. I didn't word that smoothly at all. But my main point is it's very fluid realignment. It is. What was it? I think Kevin Warren, the Big Ten commissioner, was in London when it was announced that USC and UCLA were going to the Big Ten. So it's a weird thing. My only strong take, though, has been Florida State will not be in the SEC. I did a whole, and I don't even do these kinds of videos that often. I did a video and I said no to Florida State. Yeah, there are quite a few schools that in the SEC that have two in the same state. Texas A&M, Alabama Auburn, Ole Miss, Mississippi State. And Florida State is a bigger brand than some of the schools I just mentioned. They have a huge fan base, as we've learned. Some actually still watch me. Man, I just don't think that they would ever get in. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense because you already do have Florida. I think North Carolina will be in the SEC one day. I do. But I did find it interesting that there are so many people that believe Florida State will get out of this ACC deal, which I am not sure that they will, and join the SEC when the SEC commissioner took a massive shot at Florida State in an interview, saying we didn't jump. It was something along these lines. Greg Sankey said, we didn't jump up and down saying we should have been in the playoff or whatever, or something like that. And look, do you think the conference commissioner would take a shot at Florida State with the potential chance of them joining the conference? No. And it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird. Because Florida State would draw eyeballs. Even if Florida is already in the SEC, they would draw eyeballs. They're an absolutely, positively massive brand. I don't know if I would consider them top 10, but they're closer to top 10 than they probably are top 20. They're probably top 15. We have 16 lead teams in the conference. Florida State would make a lot of sense. But just based on what I've heard, and just there's just not enough smoke out there from really big-time credible people that this is even remotely possible. So my hottest take, even though Florida State is a bigger brand than North Carolina, because football is just bigger than basketball and whatever, I think North Carolina will be in the SEC one day. I do. I do, I do, I do. Ooh. Now, what about Clemson? I don't know. But I lost 5 years on my conference realignment. Diatribe. Now, if you guys don't mind, I want to do another football little diatribe here that has nothing to do with football. I am excited to share that Ross Dellinger reported that there is more steam towards a college baseball scholarship and roster size increase. And that astoundingly helps LSU. Okay? I've said this so many times about how lucky we have it at LSU with all the different schools and teams that don't win anything in anything, but LSU wins at a lot of different sports. The sport that LSU has been the most dominant in is baseball. All right, it is the best athletic program in terms of natties, obviously from the Burtman era to now. And one thing that works against LSU baseball is the scholarship crunch. There are only 11.7 scholarships allowed to be given to baseball players in total. Now, football gets 85. Basketball gets either 13 or 14. So think about a basketball roster, which is normally 13 or 14 guys or gals. And think about a baseball roster where you need at least 10 pitchers. The numbers don't work out. And I've talked to Paul Manieri about this when I was still on the LSU beat every single day. And it infuriated him, the scholarship limitation, because LSU wants to dominate in baseball. They want to spend money in baseball because they make money in baseball. They have fans who they know would sell out nearly every game if we are elite. So we won, and LSU sells out every game. Not every game is filled, but more often than not. You guys get what I'm saying. Attendance, all of that. But a scholarship increase gives LSU a massive advantage. Massive advantage. Where you do begin to lose some is the competitive balance. Even though it would help out at LSU because they want as many scholarships as they possibly can. The scholarship limitation evened out the talent. So baseball, which is inherently even and very random, it's tough to just go out and dominate another baseball team. It's really hard, in fact. It's even harder when you suppress the amount of scholarships each team has. All right. So as Mike points out, I've been talking about this for years. As Chance points out, LSU does have TOPS, which is, you know, in-state scholarships and all of that, academic things that they're able to work around the 11.7. Still, you get the point, right? It helps LSU. It really, really, really does. And LSU has also had a massive advantage when they've had football players that also play baseball because they're at school on football scholarship. So Chad Jones, Jared Mitchell, they're at LSU on football scholarship. And it's always been weird. You know, Rafe Rimes gave up his scholarship. Rafe Rimes is one of the best contact hitters in LSU baseball history. So I think this will allow more full scholarships. LSU baseball rarely gives a full scholarship because you only get 11.7. It is needed. It is very much needed. And I've always said this, not a baseball expert, not a baseball expert at all. I'll never be the foremost LSU baseball expert. But an injustice is an injustice. Now, what does this mean for Title IX? What does it mean for the other sports? I don't know. But it's dumb, mathematically, to force a team to only have 11.7 scholarships. And it's part of why I was always a big proponent of having 7-inning games, at least in the midweek and on Sundays. Because it is unfair to the pitchers where we know pitches thrown and inning and mileage matters. It is unfair for the pitchers in a profit-making endeavor to have to take a partial scholarship to wear out their arms in random 9-week games. So, or 9-inning games. We needed this. And it's a good day if you're an LSU baseball fan. Let's go to Sibley. Carter, do you think that conference realignment will experience another big change in 2 years? Will geographic proximity of teams cause this to happen? Distance games are almost impossible for some. Okay. This is a very loaded chat and loaded question. All right. And when I mean loaded, it is loaded. Because obviously the Big Ten sucks. It sucks. But what's interesting, let's just take two bordering states. All right, let's take a rivalry game that we already discussed. LSU versus Alabama. LSU and Alabama, even though they share a significantly sized border, right? The campuses are still a 10-hour drive away from each other. So when it comes to proximity, you're still a far ways away from a lot of different SEC schools. Obviously, Baton Rouge to Gainesville is a drive, so on and so on. You get the point. So geographic proximity has never really, you know, you still have to basically fly everywhere to play the games, right? But cross-country flights are different. Kids have classes. There is a bunch of studies done on proper rest and before studying for a test. It's very interesting. You know, let's take a sport like women's soccer. And obviously test scores is not, you know, what we're really, you know, worried about. But there was a study done. I don't remember where, when players head the ball or they play a soccer game, the next day, if they have to take an exam, their scores are significantly lower because in soccer, you have to, you know, head the ball, exert a lot of energy, and you're just hitting your head and not getting proper rest. Well, think about all the, like, the midweek Big Ten soccer matches between Washington and Maryland, right? It's weird. So geographic proximity matters more for these smaller conferences. You know, the Sun Belt has really leaned into it, Mountain West and so on. But yes, I do think conference realignment will experience another big change in 2 years. I do see a world where the Big Ten would try and poach from SEC teams and vice versa. I could see the Big Two going at it. But the truth is, Sibley, this is a never-ending cycle of profit margins, as is the case with every sports league. We are going to get to the point in the current model and stage that we are in that we are just going to keep eating one another. I could see a world where it's all one big thing and it's only one commissioner. So it's not as big of a deal proximity for football as it is the other sports because you only travel 5 times a year for football, sometimes 6, sometimes 7 if you're a big school. But yeah, I think, you know, when you say big, we'll experience another big change. I don't think anything will overcome USC and UCLA going to the Big Ten. Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC is not really that big of a deal. It's really not. Proximity-wise, it matters. Geographically-wise, it matters. Brain-wise, it made sense. But the distance will never make sense. It never will. So yeah, I think we will see more changes. It might not ever be as big as what we're experiencing now. The first year of Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC and the first year of Washington, Oregon, UCLA, and USC joining the Big Ten. We'll never see anything quite as drastic as that, but who knows? Who knows? Chance believes North Carolina and Virginia are the two most likely SEC schools to join. I can definitely see North Carolina. There is a lot, and I mean a lot, of North Carolina that goes through my mind. Charlotte, big SEC city. A lot of SEC network stuff in Charlotte. SEC brand equity. How many basketball blue bloods are in the SEC? One. You get North Carolina, you add two. Yeah, well, you add another. And Virginia academically makes a lot of sense. Let's go. Here. Interesting story. Obviously, when we get an hour in, we get into some other topics. Interesting story. Okay. Team USA has a front runner for its coach. And by the way, congrats to Sibley. He probably didn't hear this at first, but he's going to be really excited because this is honestly his favorite, one of his favorite players, Derek Dillon. So Sibley didn't know he was winning this card, but he won Derek Dillon autographed card. I'll mail it out tomorrow, Sibley. But Team USA, they are leaning towards Patrick Vieira as their head coach. Arsenal legend. I would love that. I grew up watching Patrick Vieira. Utah State just fired their football coach. Blake Anderson got the can. Did Mason Taylor gain 3 inches and 35 pounds since his freshman year? So this has always been an interesting topic, Cole. So first off, thanks to Cole and his PHL shirt. It looks great on you. Please go shop at powerhourlsu.com. It costs a lot to keep the website up. So I basically break even. I actually lose money if I don't get a lot of sales. So go to powerhourlsu.com, get your merch. Three inches, 35 pounds. So, one thing I would change about college football recruiting that is never discussed is age. Age is the single most underrated thing discussed in college football recruiting. We have scientific evidence that proves that to be true. So, is it plausible that since Mason Taylor got to LSU, that he gained 3 inches and 35 pounds since his freshman year? Yes. It even becomes more plausible if you are young when you enter LSU. It's harder, significantly harder, if you are younger. And we got a bunch of new viewers. You guys have my the people that have been with me for a while, you've heard this, but when DJ Chark and Leonard Fournette joined LSU, they're in the same recruiting class. Class of 2014. Leonard Fournette was 1 year and 9 months older than DJ Chark. Now, you would think, in theory, if you're in the same recruiting class, you would be in the same age. But it's not the case. So I don't know Mason Taylor's actual age. I've never actually looked this up. But if he was on the younger side, it makes the weight and size gain, if it is indeed true, we know weight and size gets, you know, schemed up. But if we do know that he was on the younger side joining LSU, well, it makes what he has done that much more impressive. So, yeah, it's an interesting question, Cole. Some guys are older for the class, and they still do grow quite a bit. But, yeah. And, you know, we were talking about Colin Hurley and his reclassification a little bit earlier. Colin Hurley's reclassification will go down in the LSU history books, right? Especially if him or Bryce Underwood turn out to be like all-time greats at LSU. Colin Hurley was young for the class of 2025. And he's still reclassified to 2024 at a position where it's not as important to do that in quarterback. So it was a very bold move for him to do it. So him being here makes him one of the youngest LSU college football players of all time. It's impressive. It's a lot harder. It just is. Who are the best quarterbacks in college football? Well, they're all old guys. Sure, you have year two Caleb Williams, year two Bryce Young winning the Heisman. But those are the can't-miss five stars. A lot of the best quarterbacks are year four, year five, year six guys. Let's go to Pegasus. He says, I've already accepted in about 5 to 10 years from college football just being a super league and business at private equity for different teams. Yeah. I could see it. I could see it. But this is why the single most important thing for any sports league, for it to be a good sports league, is structure. Now, it's not as important for, you know, league popularity to have great structure. There's a ton of popular sports leagues around the world that have terrible structure, but they still make millions of dollars every year. But what makes college football so great is its structure. And the more you tinkle with it, the more it gets watered down. Now, we'll take a few more in the next 5 to 10 minutes. We'll answer as many questions as we possibly can. Up to this point, Sibley has been the top super chatter. Blanche and Jared right behind him. What was it? Bob Newhart died today. Let's go to CT999. Very good question. Don't want to change. No. Especially if you want to get us back on topic, and especially if he's super. What will PJ Woodland be as far as playing time this year? He is going to more than likely play a lot. More than likely. And I'm down with it. I do think he was undervalued. I do think it is something that he was Gatorade Player of the Year in Mississippi. And I do think it's something that my grade on him was good. And then immediately LSU football, they'll let you know who the guys are that are standing out. It is something that during spring, while games are actually not being played, and especially during spring where seniority will more often than not win out, Woodland jumped Toviano, getting some reps with the ones. It's something. Now, we don't know how he's actually going to do when he actually does play. But with Zy Alexander coming off the injury, he's got a shot. He's got a shot. He will undoubtedly be a big-time player for LSU in terms of snaps in the next 2 years or so. Might not be a huge snap share here, but in year one, but he's going to play quite a bit. Now, CT, where it gets very spicy is, will he be good? And the answer to that is very hard to get to. You know, it just comes down to your definition of good. If you are using a baseline definition of good, then the answer is like probably not if all things are like created equal. But relative to expectation, a three-star year one corner in the SEC, he probably has a decent shot of being solid. Because, you know, and you can always kind of see with my commentary, when I'm doing a film study or just talking about a player in general, I will never, ever, ever truly go in on a true freshman, okay? Because it's hard. It's really hard playing Division I Power 5 football as a true freshman. And on top of that, it's even harder to be good. Like, it's insane. And, you know, I try to, in my prep, not focus in too much on recruiting and not focus too much in on question marks, because we tend to focus on the negative, even if it's not like a truly negative story. It's just natural for us to spend a lot of our offseason talking about the defensive tackle room because it is newsworthy. But what I always try to do, I normally on my show outlines, I write down Will Campbell's name just to make sure that I always get around to talking about him, because he's such a given at this point. Like, we know he's great. We know he's going to be a first-round pick. We know he's 96 overall on the EA Sports College Football Game. He's damn good. But what makes his career even wilder is your very first game of your career, Jared Versus lined up over you. Legit, very first snap of your career as a true freshman, left tackle It's Jared Verse. It's insane. It is really insane. And how many great pass rushers he went up against. Jared Verse, year one. Year one and year two, Landon Jackson. Year one and year two, Alabama player, the Dallas Turner. Chris Braswell, year one and year two. Will Anderson, year one. Princely Uniman, whatever his name is. Studs. Absolute studs. Oh, I do have another surprise. Let me see if I can pull this off. This was supposed to happen a little bit earlier in the stream. So, I want to make it happen now. What am I going to play here? Oh, well, since they support us, we'll be right back right after this. Home is where the heart is, and our friends at NOPOD Roofing really takes that to heart. 504-810-8744. Give them a call today for all of your roofing needs. And one of my favorite things about NOPOD Roofing is their versatility. They not only do roofing, they do siding, they do painting, they do tree removal, fencing, anything home improvement. Our friends at NOPOD will get you straight. Give them a call today at 504-810-8744 and let them know PHL and Carter the Power sent you. We never overpromise and always overdeliver with NOPOD, baby. Let's go. All right, y'all. I want y'all to meet Took. Look at Took. Oh, man. So we look after Took, new dog in the family. She actually fully belongs to Haley's parents, but since it's a younger dog, I've been taking care of Took quite a bit. And there she is. Look at Took. Had to take her to the vet. Not too long ago, but Took is just Tooking. Gotta love it. Look at that. Oh, I wanna get a shot of Took. Look at that. All right, y'all. Got to get the podcast ready for tomorrow. Do you want to shout out all our top super chatters of the evening? CT999, Blanche, Jared, Sibley, Appreciate you guys. And the winner of the Derek Dillon card tonight, Sibley. I don't think so at this point. It is Power Hour LSU. Boom. And tonight we are doing, bison meat tacos. Let's go.